Now, obviously, Artillery has a new album out, Michael, and let's talk about the new album and tell us all about the new Artillery album.
Yeah, all right. Well, yeah, we got a new album out. It was called The Face of Fear, and it's released through Metal Blade, and it's the third album that I'm starring on, if you want to use that term. And it's I think that maybe this time around we were very spontaneity in the studio and stuff like that was very present. I think that the main inspiration for this album came from, well, these big world problems that we are having right now, like this global crisis thing on all kinds of levels. You know, we have the environmental disasters, and we got the political disasters, and we got, you know, the human condition is in a bad shape too, you know, so all that fell down in our own cauldron, creative cauldron, and it became the Face of Fear. Mm-hmm.
You know, Michael, I'm going to admit to you right now, when you first joined the band, the album, and it wasn't your singing, but the album that you joined when you know, the album you sang on when you joined, I wasn't as big of a fan of as I was of the previous couple records. And I think as you've gone on in this band, things have gotten better. Actually, musically, this is probably one of the best Artillery albums that came out, and in my opinion, the best one that you have sang on. And, you know, what has changed with the band? You know, what changed between maybe, you know, these last couple albums and then obviously onto this one?
Well, but first of all, thank you very much for the kind words, you know, but to be honest, I actually don't know. I don't know what, I mean, I think it's just simply the process of, you know, being in the band for like 6 or 7 years now, and the whole experience, but also because the last year has been quite, you know, eventful, I would say, because there's a lot of stuff going on, and I think that, It you know, luckily we persevered and we stayed on track very easily. I think we could have just, you know, gotten all frustrated and you know, used it against each other. But instead, I think that maybe we realized that Artillery could be the path of somehow, you know, putting all this kind of frustration into something focused. So I think mm-hmm. that maybe that's the reason why, but I can't really tell you why that is, but I don't know, the stars must have been set right, you know, the constellations or something like that, but I don't know actually,
right.
I think that I always try to think like I'm, you know, I always try to be in a band and work in a band just like Motorhead did. And to me, it has to be like a natural process, and you have to just simply wanting to be there and then just simply use what you got inside. And I think that maybe over the years it become a little bit more refined. You have to figure out your place and your role in a band, and I think that we're as close to it now as we've ever been before. So, yeah.
So what? One of the things that really impressed me about this album is that, you know, your presence and your vocal performance are so much better than they were on the first album you sang with Artillery. And I really have to say, I love your vocal performance on this album. I think that you really come into your own. And, you know, vocally, how did you approach this album, you know, as compared to the previous two? And, you know, talk about your vocal performance on this album, because I think it's great.
Well, okay. Yeah, well, thanks. but, yeah, I don't know. I think that the whole aim for this album before we went into the studio was that we wanted maybe to have a little bit more aggression to it. And the stuff that I wrote was more aggressive too, and I think that I had to just figure out that I should do that in that way, because I think that on the Legions album, I was coming from my other band, Ripe, which was far more like rock and roll, heavy metal kind of style, and I didn't know I mean, if I should figure out a new personality around the fact that I was joining a distillery, but this time around I knew that I had to do something like that to capture the aggression and so on. So I'm quite pleased that you said that, because I was actually curious whether or not people found it to be maybe something that I was trying a little bit too hard at, but I wasn't, I mean, I wasn't out of character, so I just really enjoyed doing it the way it was, you know.
Right.
You know, what's interesting too is that when I saw you guys play live here in Cleveland, it didn't seem like you had to try. It seemed like you fit right in with the band. And in my opinion, that same vibe I got when I saw you live has finally hit this record.
Awesome. And I think that maybe also it's because that, well, Michael and Morten and so on has also maybe learned from me. I think that maybe we've been, you know, collaborating, and maybe they have been thinking more about what I could do in the songs as well. So maybe that was like, you know, a collaborative thing. And yeah, maybe think a little bit more how I did it live in the studio. So yeah, also, I think that maybe, as I said, that the spontaneity might have been a reason why too, because I do like it to be a little bit raw and a little bit more brutal, you know. So yeah.
And what was it like for you guys in Artillery to play the U.S. for the first time?
You know, some of the schedules were quite optimistic. I mean, we had to drive for like sometimes like 12 or 16 hours in between gigs, you know. So while we were basically sitting upright, you know, during that whole almost 1 month and a half we were doing that. So it was quite hard, but I think at the same time, it's for a guy who's from Scandinavia and the whole adventure of going to America and touring is like a dream come true as well. You know, you're going to see all these places that you only seen in movies, you know, and stuff like that. And I think that just like Tobias Forge said from Ghost, that Scandinavia is very, you know, inspired and maybe fascinated by the whole Americana thing. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we don't overdub, you know, movies. We don't do stuff like that. We watch them, you know, only with subtitles if necessary. But I think that in general, people have a passion for the, you know, English and the American language. So it's quite natural. So at the same time, you feel like you somewhat know some of these places. I mean, and at the same time, it was quite surreal. You know, all of a sudden you were there and, you know, you were the Whiskey at the Go-Go and you were in New York and you were, you know, anywhere. And because I think that we really tried to cover as much ground as possible. And, I mean, there's a lot of road stories connected with that tour and the following, because we did another one. I mean, all kinds of crazy stuff, like running out of fuel in the Rocky Mountains and, trying to drink that stuff. We read about this Four Loko night thing. So we found this Loko stuff somewhere, and I think we managed well. I mean, we had some, you know, beers before that, and then we drank these Four Lokos, and I just remember having some of the worst hangovers ever in my life. and stuff like that on tour is not a good thing, you know, but we still had a laugh about it, because you know, we had to do this kind of Four Loko thing. And at the same time, the first time we were around, we had Neil Turbin with us, you know, so he could tell quite a few stories, because obviously he's, you know, being in Anthrax once and having all these other people that he know in the scene, so he could tell us a lot of stories and so on. So it was all, you know, a huge experience, and I hope that the next time that we will tour America, we will have a little bit more of a, you know, a less optimistic schedule and maybe a little bit more time for exploration and enjoyment. So, yeah.
Now, you wrote most of the lyrics on this album, and I know you talked about writing about the environment and stuff like that, which you touched on earlier, you know, but what about the political aspect of it? Because, you know, you obviously there's a lot of political stuff going on in Europe, and did that also inspire a lot of the lyrics that you wrote for this record?
Yeah, well, most certainly. I mean, half a year ago, I became a father, and all of a sudden, I know that this is like almost like a cliche that you're saying it's a life-changing experience, and and the thing was, to me, it was like creeping in on me, because at first I thought, well, okay, well, I'm still the same guy, but now I'm a father too. But all of a sudden, this kind of aspect came into my life that I no longer was alone, in the sense of that you know, as an adult, you can somehow ride any storm. You can say to yourself, okay, well, I know myself, and I'm almost 40 years old, you know, and you can take some kind of hardship, and then, you know, you can mentally prepare yourself for things. But all of a sudden, all of these things came into my mind that, oh, well, what is this kind of a world that we are living in right now? Because I'm actually quite pessimistic. I'm cynical, and as I see things, you know, I don't think that, I mean, in any way we can continue as we are doing right now, but either population-wise and so on. And I saw this interview just quite recently with David Attenborough, where he said, well, we on a grand scale is living beyond our means. And I think that was like very spot on, because we cannot afford to do as we do. And I don't just simply mean that as in a day-to-day basis on what we are consuming. I mean, because, yeah, and I think that, I mean, the next big war we will see will be a war of resources. It's going to be this war on water, clean water, and food, and electricity, and stuff like that, you know, sanitation, stuff like that is going to be the next big thing that we will fight over. In the past, it would be riches, but now it will be survival. And I think that, I mean, to have all these political problems, which I think is sometimes very unnecessary and unfocused, and it's too much about redundant, you know, problems. We have to, because I had to somehow channel all that fear and frustration into something creative, because I couldn't just run around and keep all that inside. So it felt really good to put it into something that I could hold on to, maybe. But at the same time, I also maybe was a little bit saddened by the fact that I wasn't relieved in the sense that I thought I would be, because the problems would still be there. You know, the world is still this place as it is. And I don't know, I mean, maybe back in the past, like 10 years ago, I was like, you know, I thought that some clever brains would show up so that we would keep our biodiversity and something like that. But now I think that we're just gonna, you know, things like, you know, interesting animals and interesting, you know, cuisines is gonna be a thing of the past. It's gonna be a barren world, and not just like Philip K. Dick nightmare, you know, like Blade Runner, and where you can imagine it just to cheer you up. But I'm afraid that's the way we're going. I think it's gonna be a disaster.
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting. You got a lot of stuff going on in Europe. You know, Britain leaving the EU, and you know, you have you know, riots in France. And did any of these kinds of events going on, you know, on your side of the world, have anything to do with inspiring you to write the lyrics on this album?
Yes, surely. I mean, because I think that EU was an attempt to unite Europe, but people got scared of the fact that, you know, corruption and the whole power mongering thing of, you know, EU is putting their fingers into national politics, which obviously will piss people off, because they shouldn't do that. They should unite on the terms of what we could do together, which is relevant to do together. And I think the whole riot thing that is going on in France, and I was in France, I know, not quite recently, but I think like a year ago, and I always like to talk about, you know, it's going to be like there's going to be a lot more of these revolts. Next time it's going to be in Germany, I think, and we're having these problems in Scandinavia as well, because I think there's now a disconnection between those who are in power and those who are actually, you know, working for the country. I think that people dismayed by the fact that they see their tax money getting, you know, blown into all kinds of political projects who are more like, you know, I don't know, something that they might find to be the right thing to do politically, but it doesn't really do anything for their, you know, fellow men mm-hmm. and women, I should say. And I think this is like other things, is they're going to take, you know, people that want to have the power back, and it's gonna be a problem if they don't realize that soon enough. We are going to see this like whole isolationist idea, spread into the other European countries as well, and also because we got this huge refugee thing happening, which I think that you guys are having as well. Mm-hmm. What are we going to do? Because it's without getting into all these kinds of theories and conspiracy theories as well.
Right.
You get curious about how we can solve this, because it's maybe, as I said, this war on resources, it's already begun, and this is a silent war as it is right now. It's going to be quite outspoken, I think.
Well, you brought up, you know, a little bit about the U.S. and some of the things we're going through here. And, you know, being from Denmark, one of the things that people bring up in our political system is they bring up about how Denmark is this big utopia, and everybody's happy there, and people pay an insane amount of taxes and are okay with that, and everybody's happy and all this other stuff, and that it's this big socialist country. And, you know, really, what is it like to be able to, you know, what's it like living there? You know, I mean, how accurate are these things? And, you know, just talk about what life is like in Denmark, you know, because in the media here, a lot of what goes on, from what I'm told by many of my friends in Europe, and having been over there as well, is that there's a lot of stuff that's misrepresented.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that obviously we are paying a very high tax this year. And I think that until a few years back, we did that gladly because it gave you, it was a state of welfare, you know, and, you know, good education and the whole, you know, going either to the hospital or whatever you had, were in need of, everyone was able to do that without paying for it. And if you lost your job, you would get money on a daily basis, you know, you could survive. So basically it was a system where no one would be left behind. You know, everyone was able to somehow sustain a life, you know. Mm-hmm. But as it is right now, and I don't know why that is, because I mean, I saw a stand-up show with Henry Rollins, and he said, well, there's something going on here that is wrong, and it's like we're trying to become more, you know, capitalistic, and I think that that's a real shame, because I don't think that any Danes in reality decries the fact that they had to pay taxes, because if their fellow men is living well, they are living well. Mm-hmm. And that might be the whole socialist idea, but it's not like, you know, you can, I don't know, I mean, I never thought about the dream of living in another country with another approach, because I'm quite pleased with how things is handled, but or was handled, because nowadays I see corruption spread, and it's become more tough to survive even if you're in dire need, and if you're because in, you know, class system now, it becomes tougher to break these layers of society, which in the past was like something that was, you know, you're born right, and even if you were born poor and you were born, you know, with all these kind of problems, you would be given the tools of transcend society in any way you wanted. Yeah, well, I think that the money, the wells have run dry, and I think that there's some people who have been, you know, having their, you know, they're getting too much money, or they're putting away money, and, you know, we had these banks who were, you know, billion-dollar frauds and in big corporations, and we see these people who have been, you know, persecuted for you know, yeah, once again, fraud and stuff like that, and all of a sudden they pop up once again, you know, all of a sudden they can. They survive. And if you're a normal day-to-day ordinary Joe guy, you know, you can't do jack shit wrong, and then you will be, you know, in dire trouble. It's just like if you're just doing it on a bigger scale, they can't get you, and it's very demoralizing. And at the same time, I have to say that still, the whole idea of having a high taxes system, as we do, where, you know. Most, as you know, education and the whole hospital thing and all that, you know, all these kinds of, you know, things in society, which still works to some degree, it still creates. I don't know if I mean, possibly Bernie Sanders and stuff like that has been saying that the Scandinavian model is the ideal model. I don't know if I'm misquoting him, but I know that he's been saying something like that. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, yeah. Obviously, it is. To me, it is. But if the trust is there, if the trust is between the politicians and the people, you can do that. I don't feel, you know, less free. I actually feel completely free to what I want to do, because I'm not. I can do that with pay for the next 3 months, you know. Mm-hmm. I can get a job that I want to have, and it's going to be working out fine for me. But I know that still also it's a union thing. You know, most people in Denmark are in unions, or at least they were. And then that it's going to change now, because they feel maybe that the unions are doing less for them now. So it's going to be the same thing, you know, once again. It's going to be a problem, because if we lose our unity, the big corporation is going to, you know, make us all become individuals, if we're unable to stand together, we're having a huge problem. But people are getting scared, you know. All of a sudden they are now maybe in a situation where they might lose their house, or they might, you know, lose whatever they have. Due to the fact that if they want to have things change on the workplace, even though they might be having bad working conditions, no, they don't dare do that anymore. They don't dare to go on a...
Now, let's talk a little bit about how you ended up in this band, because, you know, I didn't really hear much of you before you joined Artillery, and let's talk about how you ended up in this band to begin with.
Well, I not as much joined Artillery as they wanted me to join them. At the time when I was, I was kindly asked if I was interested in helping them with a few gigs, because the singer before me, Søren Adamson, wanted to leave the band. And I have been running around, you know, playing with another band. It's called Merciful Diamond, which was like a King Diamond, Merciful Fate, you know, cover band. And that came to fruition because we thought, we were quite a few pals and we really liked, you know, King Diamond and Merciful Fate. And we thought, well, we don't really have a cover band of that. So we made that, and all of a sudden there was a lot of people around us who were very enthusiastic. So all of a sudden it turned into, well, I would say quite a good show. You know, I had a real, you know, femur bones, and I was having a real skull, and I was having the real, you know, face, corpse paint, whatever you want to call it, and stage outfits and stuff like that. And we were playing in a small festival where Artillery would play as well. Mm-hmm. I don't know, I must have made an impression, because afterwards, I think a couple of days afterwards, Michael wrote me if I was interested in helping them out with a few gigs, because Søren couldn't do them. And I said, well, sure, I would love that, but at the same time, it was like a complete, like, 1.5-hour set, which I managed to work up in, I think, a couple of rehearsals. So I was like having these lyrics written all over my hands, and, you know, anywhere I could put things that it wouldn't be too obvious to just remember, you know, the lyrics. And they went up, you know, it turned out all right, I think. We got along very well at the same time. And I felt very comfortable, and they were, you know, having a lot of confidence in me. So it felt great. And when I was asked, obviously, of course, I couldn't say no. So that was the way it came to be. So the third gig I played was on the cruise ship, on, you know, the Bards to Hell cruise ship, on the deck, looking out, out on the wonderful ocean near Miami, and it was just so surreal, you know. I'd never been outside of Europe before that, you know, so it was like, what is going on? Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Well, this new album seems to have done very well for you, and how's it been received so far by a lot of the fans?
Well, it has been received very, very well. I think that, people have been very kind to us, with Legions and Penalty by Perception as well, and a lot of people really like Penalty by Perception. But it seems like this time around, we also have been able to somehow get reconnect maybe even to some of the original fans of Artillery from the three first albums, I think. So that to me has been maybe the most important point with this album, but the general reception has been very positive. Obviously, all the time you still have these people who think that they want Fleming back, and maybe we should have left out the pain ballad, semi power ballad, or whatever you want to call it. But we didn't, you know, write a ballad for the album just to have anything similar to When the Magic Is Gone, because the thing is that Pain was written like almost 20 years ago, so it wasn't like we were trying to aim for something like that. It was just simply there, and we found it was a nice song to put in there. But on a general term, it's been just very great. Yeah.
So I'm listening to the vibe of this record, and I get the vibe that it has a lot more of an old school sound to it. Like, it sounds a lot like the older material. And when you started singing on it, did you get that same vibe with the music written for this album that, say, that I'm getting?
Yes, I did. When I first heard some of the first songs which ticked in on my Dropbox thing, I was thinking, yeah, we got something here that's fresh and new, but it's also connected with some of the earlier stuff. I totally got that vibe as well. And I don't know, once again, I don't know really how that came about. It just simply happened. But I think that maybe it's because, you know, we felt that it was the right thing to do. And it, all in all, I think that was something that we could feel very early on, that this is something that we should capture. So, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, for my last question, do you have any last words for the fans that were, you know, basically checking this interview out and checking out the new album?
Well, I mean, first of all, if I have a message for the fans, it will surely be this one, and that's a huge thank you for sticking with us through all the ups and downs and all the years and so on, because as you get older, you find out how much it means to have people who support you and who believe in you. And you know, sometimes you might be in doubt of something, and you might have a day, and all of a sudden this wonderful message takes in from someone who says, oh, well, the new album rocks, so you did great last night, or your song or lyric on that stuff really meant a lot to me. And all of a sudden you realize how important it is to you personally, but also to other people. So I cannot intensify enough the roaring thank you, because it's just awesome. It's awesome to be that guy who's able to do that, you know. So thank you.